The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Doctor Strange from 1978. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is this a case of a Marvel property hitting it big almost 40 years ago, or was it just too strange? We watched Doctor Strange from 1978 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme.
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie do you think? Should've got bad, I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Hello and welcome to the season finale of season 3 of The Rufus Project, and we're finishing with one heck of a redeeming features. I am your host, Trevor Holland, and I am joined by my good friend and co-host,
Christian Fletcher. Thank you, Trevor, for having me back as always.
Oh, always great to hear your voice, but I think we need to cut these introductions a bit short for a little extra special announcement.
Ooh.
Now, if you went to the recent B-Movies live show, you might be familiar with our guest for this episode of the podcast. He produced the wonderful original soundtrack for the show, and he's also performed as the narrator. It's my great pleasure to introduce to you actor, musician, composer, and DJ and writer, Chris Richards. Welcome to the Rufus Project.
Thanks, Trevor. Thank you very much for having me on. Hey, Christian, how are you, mate?
Good, thank you. How are you going, Chris? It's good to have another voice to contribute to these, shall I say, strange movies that we watch.
Oh, look, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I love the way you guys extemporize on these all these bizarre little movies. And yeah, thank you very much for letting me be a part of it.
It's great to have you on board.
It's definitely always good to have another voice, another opinion, and another point of view. So thank you very much for coming on. We definitely appreciate it.
It's a great honour.
Thank you. I'm not too sure how you're feeling about that, because after all, we did get you to watch a redeeming features movie. In this case, Doctor Strange from 1978.
Oh, good grief. I've seen some bad things in my time, but good heavens. Oy.
Yeah, don't give too much away. We like to hold it back. You know, sometimes it comes through very strong early on, but that's okay. So for anyone out there who doesn't know what the 1978 version of Doctor Strange was about, this is from IMDb. A psychiatrist becomes the new Sorcerer Supreme of the Earth in order to battle an evil sorceress from the past.
Ooh.
Now, is that about right to you guys?
Yeah, I was going to say, if only the movies were as good as the plot summary.
Hell, if only the movie was as simple as the plot summary. God.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, but yeah, I must admit, I'm going into this completely blind, Trevor, having, you know nothing about this new Doctor Strange movie, and also being not very familiar with the Marvel Universe. So it's even a stranger movie to me.
Yeah, well, I figured that, you know, with Doctor Strange hitting the box office charts recently with the big shiny Marvel Cinematic Universe version. I mean, it seemed like the perfect time to cover off this forgotten gem from the past. Lump of coal, maybe.
That's using the term gem very, very generously.
Yeah. Oh, we've already done that movie. I don't want to think about it again.
Oh, I missed it. Damn.
I didn't mind Gem and the Holograms.
we will move on. I think we were a bit divided on that one. But anyway, but you definitely had me, Trevor, at 1978. I was going in thinking, I've seen a few disco sci-fi musicals of this time that I'm thinking, wow, maybe we might actually be watching another one that I'd never heard of before. So I think that's probably the angle I was coming in, and a little bit of disappointment. But anyway, I don't want to give too much away.
Understatement of the century.
Could you tell in my voice?
Well, I can. I'm thinking where this is going, but let's just keep on moving. And now, before we get too much into the details of the movie itself, we'd like to cover over a little bit of turkey trivia, where we talk turkey about the turkey and, well,
a bit of trivia, it's all in the title, really. So this movie is rated 5.4 out of 10 on IMDb. Of course, being a TV movie, there is absolutely no budget information, but I'm guessing it wasn't much.
It felt exactly like the sort of thing you'd imagine watching on a Sunday afternoon on TV. Like, it never felt anything more than a TV movie. I couldn't get past that, so...
When I actually heard it was a TV movie, I had this terrible flashback to those, like, after-school specials where it had information about drugs and alcohol, which no parent could afford to pass up or not watch. You know, it's like the Eight Is Enough, very special after-school family special. And I was like, oh, no, please, please, no.
Maybe there were subliminal messages in there we just weren't getting. I don't know.
I wouldn't have put it past them. There's no wonder it feels like a TV movie all the way, because when you look at the cast, this cast is like a who's who of daytime TV for for a good decade or so after this movie came out. I mean, if you go through the list, there's a lot of people who were in like Days of Our Lives, Murder, She Wrote, Simon and Simon. Just to give you a rundown, in the title role of Dr. Strange, we have Peter Hooton. I've got to admit, though, I did not know many of these names. I did know the main bad guy, Morgan Le Fay, played by Jessica Walter, mainly from the more recent, much better Archer.
I love Jessica Walter. I'm not ashamed to admit it.
She's fantastic, and she always plays these really feisty characters, I really admire her. Even the characters she plays now are just as feisty as her in the 70s.
I know. In Arrested Development and Archer, she just absolutely shines.
So that's why I thought it was quite strange that she's... I don't know if it was in the opening credits or I read somewhere that she's billed as guest star, which I thought was probably a bit unfair, because she was very much an important role in the film.
Yeah, and... I'll just go through a few more names. We've got Philip Sterling. I know that he was a very much a staple of all sorts of TV drama. And Anne Marie Martin, or Eddie Benton, as she was known in this one, playing Clea Lake, the love interest. I love that name.
Look, I'm not ashamed to say that I love Eddie Benton. I think she's fantastic. She was actually one of my favorite scream queens of the 80s. She was in the Canadian slasher flick Prom Night. She was in low-rent movie called The Boogans. She was in Savage Harvest. She actually had a cameo in Halloween 2. She auditioned for the role of Princess Leia in the original Star Wars. She married the author Michael Crichton, who was, of course, the author of Jurassic Park. And on the original of Jurassic Park, you can see a dedication at the end of the credits to M and A.M. And A.M. is Anne Marie Martin, who co-wrote Jurassic Park with Michael Crichton.
Oh, my God, that's so interesting, isn't it? So this was really pretty much before all this stuff happened to her, really, this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. This was, like, right at the very, very start of her career. This and one other show were, in fact, the only times that she was billed as Eddie Benton. After that, she changed her name to Anne Marie Martin.
I must admit, it worked out better for her, because I was reading the credits going, who's this Eddie guy? I can't work out who's... Oh, it's her! I was a bit confused, so I think that helped.
I actually had to look her up on IMDb, and her birth name was Edmona Benton.
Oh, well, God, she were a wealth of information with that. Gosh, well, it's given, as Trevor said, a who's who of pretty much everything, actually.
Yeah, that's had a whole new slant to it, though. That was a good pickup. Awesome.
Fantastic.
And I think... And John Mills, he's Australian, isn't he?
I think he is. I think so.
Yeah, yeah, because I think he's been around. God, he was in movies even. I think he died in about 10 years ago, but he was in movies, gosh, from the 50s right through. So it was interesting seeing him in this too. So especially when you've got more experienced actors, you wonder, are they a bit dubious about what they're signing on for, especially a movie like this?
Well, remember, this was meant to be the start of an ongoing TV series. So if it had hit, then that would have been a regular paycheck for these guys.
Oh, and it definitely, that's what I was going to actually ask as my next question was, I'm sure I had read that this was going to be sort of the pilot for a TV show, and God, it does, I suppose if you were going to say pilot, I don't even know if that's the right word, but it definitely feels so much like that, setting up so many things. But I was even surprised to read that Stan Lee, is he the Marvel guy? I know nothing about this stuff.
No, Stan Lee's definitely the Marvel guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he actually read that he thinks very highly of this movie. So I don't know if that's because he thought highly of the concept or he was just happy with the end result. Yeah, I was just quite surprised.
It's definitely an artifact of its time. Like, as you guys said, it was meant to be the pilot for a TV series. But to me, it didn't feel like a pilot that was going to be based on a Marvel character. It felt like the pilot for the most boring medical procedure procedural show ever. It's like a really, really, really even more boring than it was Saint Elsewhere.
Oh my God. And that's the thing. It's sort of, even though we've got, like, Trevor and I always laugh about the length of these movies, but even with an hour and 33 movie, to be still plotting in so many places, I've got plotting written all over my notes here, but to be feeling like that in so many places, you go, that's interesting. Cause an hour and a half isn't really that long. So yeah, I know what you mean. You're definitely thinking sort of halfway through. Yeah. Are we going medical drama or?
I've actually got in my notes, plods like a sick wombat.
Sorry, Trevor,
we're getting ahead of ourselves. And it's interesting that you did mention Stan Lee, just to talk about a bit of more trivia that I've dug up, that, you know, Stan Lee was very pleased with this movie at the time, but he was disappointed by its low ratings, and he attributed that to the fact that it was aired against Roots.
Not that it was a boring medical
procedural, but it was against Roots.
Yeah. So yeah, a bit of a.
Who would you like to watch tonight, son? Kunta Kinte or Stephen Strange?
Tough choice.
Gee, I don't know.
Interestingly, Morgan Le Fay was actually the first Marvel foe to ever be adapted to live action. So she was later. It wasn't until later that that Kingpin turned up in the Incredible Hulk. And Red Skull didn't turn up in Captain America until 1990.
Oh, okay. So this is quite, I suppose, a turning point, I suppose, an influential movie in that sort of respect.
It was also interesting, I found, with Morgan Le Fay, because she continues also a roster of Marvel characters in their comic books being drawn from actual figures of mythology, much like Thor and Odin are drawn from the Aesir of Viking and Norse mythology. Morgan Le Fay is actually a figure from mythology, Morgana Le Fay, who was supposedly a, depending on who you read, which source you read, either a fairy princess along the lines of Maeve or Titania, or an evil sorceress, but whichever one you read, she figures very highly in the legends of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table as kind of like an antagonist nemesis of Merlin the Magician.
Very, very true.
Yeah, gosh, this is all very interesting. Gosh, well, it's even deeper than the movie you think.
Yeah, there's a surprising amount of depth behind some of these characters. You may not see it on the screen, but it's there somewhere if you're prepared to dig.
Somewhere behind the blurry fuzz of whatever version of the movie we're watching.
And, just to round out the trivia, for those who have seen the recent blockbuster, we've got to let you guys know that the Ancient One, the native Tibetan who was originally the Sorcerer Supreme, isn't in this movie. I don't think they could get away with an Ancient Tibetan. But mind you, even the new movie didn't think they could get away with an Ancient Tibetan. So in this case, we have Englishman Thomas Lindemar playing the Sorcerer Supreme and Doctor Strange's mentor, and that was John Mills. I know you guys ran ahead, so I know you're very eager to talk about this movie, I can tell, but we need to set our baseline. So what I've done is I've gone to Amazon, and I've dug up a review to, I suppose, let us know where we're working from. The title of this review is, Buy It If You're a Real Fan, But... Before X-Men and Spider-Man came along, fans of Marvel Comics always shuddered when they heard a new movie was coming out, because we knew it would be bad. The powers that be would always force the writers to rewrite and retool the characters and concepts to make the movies more saleable. And thus it was with Doctor Strange. with its cobbled-together storyline and absence of the more interesting characters from the series. But if you're a diehard fan, try to get a copy for your collection, but at a cheap price if possible. 1 star.
I'd probably look over that review, just go, nah, and keep scrolling.
Fair enough.
And look, I say that as a fan of the old stuff from the comics that I did see on TV. Like, I used to love the old 1978 Spider-Man live-action series. It was on when I was a kid. The Incredible Hulk, the TV series of that. Yeah, generally, I absolutely adored the serialized TV shows of comic books, because I've always been a bit of a comic book nerd. But yeah, I had up until you guys told me about this, I had absolutely no idea that there had been actually pitched a Doctor Strange show. So my curiosity was piqued. And then Chris Trevor warned me, look, I won't lie to you, it's pretty bad. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Not really selling you on it, is he?
Not really selling. But I decided to, like, swallow that because, like, when, like I said, like, I loved the TV series and even the older efforts of Marvel before it became the big grand MCU, like the older stuff, like the original Punisher movie with Dolph Lundgren in it. That was just this trashy, campy, bullet-filled fun time. And then again, the later Punisher movie with Thomas Jane. I love those adaptations. And so, yeah, you know, generally, if there's superheroes in it, I'm willing to give it a burl.
Fair enough. I mean, I was approaching this with, I suppose, a sense of morbid curiosity to see where Doctor Strange had gone before. I have seen the newer movie. I did quite enjoy it. But of course, I mean, we're here to see if we can find the redeeming features in these movies. So, you know, we can't always guarantee a good movie, but we'll see if we can find anything worthwhile within it. So, but I tell you what, though, anytime something starts with a wall of text to get you going is generally not the best of starts. But, oh, those titles and that opening music was so 70s. I loved style.
I loved the opening titles. The style of the opening titles actually made me think of the font that they used in the recent Netflix original series Stranger Things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I see, yeah.
However, the music, the less said of that, the better. Whoever did that music should be skewered through the eardrums with knitting needles. It sounded like John Carpenter improvising on a keyboard with his ass.
It was very similar. I don't know if you're familiar, Chris, with a lot of the sort of the Italian horror films like Goblin and all that kind of.
Goblin and Can. It sounded like those two bands got together and warmed up together.
Yeah, but it also sounded quite ahead of its time in terms of, not in a good way, but ahead. It sounded so 80s, even though it was sort of that late 70s. It sounded like a lot of sounds that I thought wouldn't have been coming into music until I thought of those Goblin bands and the Italian movies, and I went, yeah, that would have been quite typical of the time.
It actually, in some points in the movie, the soundtrack music, just like the incidental score, reminded me a lot of, as you said, the old Giallo movies. And I got a weird flashback to Ruggero Deodato's Cannibal Holocaust with the music in it.
Yeah, and I suppose we're sort of talking around the same time, because I think that was even made probably about 3 years before they released it, so it would have made it around about this time. So that's quite interesting. And here's me going in thinking it was just going to be flares and lots of disco music. I was so disappointed.
Poor Mr. Well, I'll tell you what, though, with this music, I figured that, to me, it was like overblown porn music to go with Stephen Strange's overblown porn stash.
I think that porn stash should have had its own billing in the credits.
And the fact that the quality of the film, again, I don't know how we were watching it, but the quality of the film made it almost, straight into that porno territory anyway.
Oh, yeah, look, there are some parts in it when Strange is interacting with one of the nurses on there, and I'm half expecting to hear that old porno chicken scratch guitar come out of him.
Yeah, he's a bit of a flirt out, Stephen.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because every time there was the scenes with the nurse, yeah, she'd either be either very flirty or just really B-grading acting. It's like as soon as she came on the screen, I'm like, oh, we're watching a really B-grade film, even though I suppose that's probably what we are watching.
And it's an interesting device, but it's one of the objections that I have in older movies, in that a lot of the female cast and the female characters aren't really given very much agency to drive the story along. They're just like window dressing, as it were.
Yeah, like they're usually either a nurse or, you know, they're giving the stereotypical, you know, the secretary or the assistant. And yeah, it's I know what you mean. And yeah, in many ways, I suppose this was still the era where they were still probably even making things like that. So, but it's probably also very very reminiscent of the whole superhero mentality, where you've got the superhero and the female sidekick, I suppose, or love interest.
And of course, with this one though, I think you've got to say that. That, like, Julie Ward or Morgan Le Fay certainly had a bit more agency, I think, than probably most female characters would have had about the time, even though she is pretty much forced to do so by the red-eyed, glowing, giant dildo puppet, whatever it was, speaking to her through the smoke.
I've got claymation here.
No, it actually looks like a radioactive kaiju to me.
Ah.
Either that or a really, really bad dollar store Godzilla Halloween costume.
That was probably it.
We'll have to wait for the Blu-ray release, and then it'd be like, oh, that's what it actually looks like.
I don't think I want to see this. I think seeing this in high definition will probably take a lot away from any of the visuals that were in any way decent throughout the movie.
Yes.
Oh, it depends on how much acid you drop before you put the DVD in the tray, I think.
Yep.
they might go back and update some of those special effects for a Blu-ray release. I'm not sure, but then that'd be such a shame because they're so 1978.
The special effects with the magic, just everyone with glowing hands. It was like one big long Deep Heat commercial.
So there weren't even consistent with that because I mean, as the magic comes in and the Sorcerer Supreme comes to visit Doctor Strange in the hospital. And he starts mind controlling the nurses, or just doing the whole thing of like Obi-Wan Kenobi-ing, these aren't the droids you're looking for. It was exactly that. And you're like, there was no glowing or anything there, but he was obviously using his magic. Whereas every other time it was like a glowing hand thing. Even the magic handshake. I wasn't too sure what the magic handshake was meant to signify, but there was this glowing handshake, as he's leaving Doctor Strange's office. It's just,
I think a lot of the magic was like it sorted out around the production room. All right, we want magic special effects. What can we do? Can we afford to do stuff like Stanley Kubrick did at the end of 2001: A Space Odyssey? No. Okay. Right. Okay. Damn it.
Someone get the highlighter out and color in the print.
And I suppose, and that's the thing. The whole thing I kept thinking when I was watching this is this came out the year after Star Wars. Okay, totally different budget. Sphere or whatever, but you think to yourself, you automatically sort of rank these special effects in with the things that were coming out around that time. So I don't know if it was being made before it or it was influenced in some way, but yeah, no, this felt more like an Italian sci-fi ripoff of the early 80s.
Yeah, very much so.
But yeah, I mean, I found that like with the first bit of the movie, like, you know, introduced to Morgan Le Fay. She comes to Earth, she takes over Clear Lake to push the Sorcerer Supreme over a bridge. And close-ups they kept having when they flashed back to that expression on his face was priceless. For a guy who needed help to stand up early on in the movie to show how old he was and how fragile he was, he gets pushed off a bridge, hit by a car, he just gets up and walks away. He limps until he magics himself well. But it's like, hang on, not 5 minutes ago, you needed help getting out of a goddamn chair, and you're saying you walked away from what just happened.
No, see, I think the thing is, he wants Wong to actually earn his pay. Help me out of the chair, Wong. I keep you around here for a purpose.
Yeah.
Other than that, he's kind of spry.
He is. I mean, you do wonder what his little sidekick, Wong, does aside from just run errands for him and spy on psychiatrists.
It's all just a bit wrong. I don't know. Sorry, it had to happen. But you mentioned the flashbacks. I think every time there was a flashback, there was these slow-mo sort of things, and it was just like, oh, no. And it was just, and it's like, slow-mos do not equal good special effects.
And the thing is, it wasn't even camera-created slow-mo. You could tell that it wasn't even created by camera or effects. It was just them moving really, really slowly in front of the camera.
Oh, gosh. But that's the thing. Like, I think you were saying, or one of us said before about the whole Stan Lee liking it, because he actually thought the technology or the effects were actually good for the time. So I don't know if we should be giving it more credit. I don't know.
We'll give it as much credit as we feel it earns.
Yeah, I must admit, we're looking at it in 2016, so...
Yeah, we can't judge it by today's standards, that's for sure. But I will say that...
It is definitely an artifact of its time.
I'd still happily see Jessica Walter play the part. I still think she'd nail it.
Yeah.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Yep. She should have been in the new one.
Actually, for me, she was the best part of this movie. Her and her plunging necklines and what I like to call resting witch face.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I know we talked about, like...
That's what it should have... That's what this whole movie should have been. It should have just been Julie Walters and her décolletage versus Peter Hooten and his mustache.
That's a 70s movie, I'd say.
It's quite amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I know we talked a bit about the visuals, but did anyone else think that every time they did magic that the sound effect sounded more like a Star Trek phaser than anything particularly magical?
Yeah, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
But I was more paying attention to the incidental sound, the foliage sound, because a lot of it seemed really, really desperately, desperately out of sync. Like another budgetary restriction, quite possibly. But, you know, footsteps weren't lining up. The sounds of contact with things weren't lining up with the action on screen. And, yeah, that level of dodginess, I think, requires a certain amount of camp to redeem it. But there wasn't any real visible camp in this movie. It really did take itself really, really seriously. And I think the seriousness which this movie approached itself with, yeah, it kind of helped it fall flat on its face for me. Like, it's not like Tommy Wiseau's The Room. Like, it takes itself seriously, but it's so ridiculously campy and bad that it's self-consciously bad, and you can enjoy it for that. But this movie was bad, and it took itself so damn seriously.
Yeah, I think, though, that... I mean, I can certainly respect that. I mean, certainly during those hospital scenes, and you knew there were hospital scenes because there was just, like, a constant voice in the background paging doctors for various reasons. that would not stop.
That seemed a lot more intrusive than just general backgrounds.
So. I know. I could not help but notice it. But there are points where they do seem to throw a bit of caution to the wind and throw in, particularly like around the more dramatic things with Morgan herself, when she's going full evil sorceress. I mean, those are the times that I actually found myself getting on that. You'd have her doing an overtop performance with some ridiculous visual happening around her and usually some sort of whammy, wangy guitar sound over this sinister synth. And I'm thinking, okay, that's approaching glorious. You can't. That was the time when you saw what this could have been. And then it just went back to being a hospital procedural with a guy who was meant to be a psychiatrist, but also seemed to be quite good as a medical doctor as well. So I think he was just a psychiatrist for when he needed to be a psychiatrist. Other than that, he was just a straight-out doctor.
There was one line early in the film that Dr. Strange put out when he was... we actually see him treating the first patient that he comes into contact with in the film. It's like, your ulcers won't clear up unless you lay off the juice. And I'm like, oh, how hip. How hip, man. Here's a guy who knows how to talk to the young people.
Yeah. He fully calls her a lush later on in the staff meeting. The staff meeting, which was just pure, how many beds do we have free? Oh, we're doing well. He comes in, they ask him why he gave her that bed. And he goes, oh, she's a lush. She needs a night off. nice professionalism there, dude. Yeah.
Again, it feels like we're watching the pilot for General Hospital, not for Doctor yeah. Strange. I don't know.
And later on, he calls alcohol juice. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think it's funny when, like, because I first read these descriptive terms for certain things in old stuff like William S. Burroughs' novel Junkie, and I'm thinking, wow, it's amazing how terms survive.
Oh, I know. But then it would have been so hip for 1978, I'm sure. I was going to say, we mentioned a lot of the hospital scenes and things like that, and that's the problem with these movies that I can't look past this whole feeling that this is a pilot, you know, when they're essentially just spending the entire movie setting up what is going to happen in the second one. That's what really annoys me about a lot of, and I notice it even with a lot of the new Marvel movies as well, and I know it's got to happen, but I think that's what this movie suffers from, is too much explanatory setup and not enough action.
I don't even know if it's explanatory setup. There's literally nothing happening in all these hospital scenes except for just banal medical talk that does nothing to push the plot until the end, where they suddenly do something that's relevant. I found the hospital bit so mind-numbingly boring. And even when they go to the Sorcerer Supreme's house, and the inside of his house looks like a cave for some reason. Okay.
Like the world's worst, the world's most unhospitable hobbit hole.
Pretty much. But again, not a lot happens there. They just have like straight out conversations, and Stephen Strange starts out not believing him, and then suddenly does believe him, and goes back and magic happens. Blah.
It seemed to me that, like Trevor said, it just plods along with the pace of a medical procedural until you get elements like Lindemann and Clea coming in and acting as the classic Deus Ex Machina to provide exposition or drive the plot towards what it's going to come. If they hadn't included those two characters, it just would have been like a really, really boring, like I said, antecedent of St. Elsewhere.
The exposition. The exposition. There is so much just.
Oh, so
let's
much
just stand
exposition.
Here and talk about the plot for a bit because nothing's happening to actually advance the plot, so we'll just tell you the plot.
And I think it's probably really bad too, because I went in, you know, imagining the poster. I don't know if you saw it too, Chris, the poster of him there with his little, what it looks like in front of a blaxploitation film or something like that.
I saw the poster. That was glorious.
And that's actually what sold me on it. And here's me thinking, and I've even got that in my notes. I waited bloody an hour and 10 minutes for him to don don the suit. Like it got
suit. Oh my god! Seriously, like he gets that choice and he gets into the swishy black duds as if he's going to turn to evil, and that looks schmick. And then he goes, "Nah, you know what? I'll follow good because I really, really want my costume to look like I ripped off a high school production of Godspell." My gosh.
Oh, but then of course he's got
terrible
bling
costume
as well.
But he can't keep the swishy black outfit that was given to him by the bad guy.
Yeah, I know, but seriously, it looked a hell of a lot better on him.
But so that's the thing. I wanted more scenes of him wearing that and attacky them flying through the air, like you know the bits I mean. You know, I wanted more scenes like that. Like at least they kind of like what you were saying, Chris. It relished its cheesiness, whereas this kind of allowed that to sort of come in the last 15 minutes or 20 minutes of the film. It felt like we were building up so much to. Oh, okay. Put the suit on earlier. Fly around like a. Let us have a great time with this movie.
I will tell you one little highlight that happened to me like before everything went.
It's all right, guys. When it gets picked up to go to TV, we'll have a better budget.
But I did like earlier on when they kind of synced everyone together because you had Stephen watching Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, then it cut to Clear Lake falling asleep in front of Abbott and Costello meet Frankenstein, so they could share their dream. And it's just thinking, oh, the days when everyone had to watch the same thing on TV.
I know, I even thought that too.
The movie probably would have turned out better if it had just been one big long cutaway of an old black and white TV playing Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
I would have zoomed in on that for sure. Like,
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I always laugh about this in movies when these women or any character that's there on their own and they're getting a bit scared. Why are you watching? Okay, admittedly, it's Abbott and Costello Frankenstein, but don't watch something horror related if you're on your own and scared. But nope, they're all got. But as you said, Trevor, it's probably all they had on TV or everyone's watching the same thing.
There's only like, it's 1978. We've got one channel and it shuts down at 10 p.m.
It would have had more agency if they were generally watching a horror movie, but, you know, this movie has very little agency.
That certainly does seem to be a trope in these old movies. There's got to be an old black and white horror movie playing on the telly in the background.
Oh, and usually, as you were saying previously, usually you want to watch that more than the film that you're actually in at the time. So.
Yeah, exactly. If I don't recognise the old horror movie, I will actually sit through the credits and watch them with a magnifying glass. What was that movie? That was more interesting than the whole damn thing I just watched.
Yeah. Oh, God, someone else. Yeah, we could talk about this all day. It's saying a lot about the quality of the movie, isn't it, when we're talking about a film that's on in the background.
I know. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I actually want to watch that now, but we need to come back to this. And look, how can we ignore a movie that has a magic security system that gets attacked by a magic cat that gets attacked by a magic zap? You know.
You make it sound so awesome. Trust me, it wasn't to experience it.
I just watched an entire sequence of the Sorcerer Supreme calmly coming out and just activating his magic security as if it was nothing. And you've got Morgan sitting off on one side watching him come out. So she stares at a cat and sends the cat over to the door, and these like just glowing lines appear to zap the cat. He just goes meow, and just calmly walks away.
That's all they could do at that time.
Oh dear.
At least make the cat run. So surely you can make it run. That would be something, but it just walks away.
It's a cat. It does what cats do. The cat doesn't give a damn about your screenplay. The cat doesn't give a damn about creating drama, creating a character. The cat just wants to have it seen, go off, get fed.
Pretty much. There's my food. Okay. But yeah, oh God, the magic that happens in this movie, like I said, it's just so over the top. What are some of the things that get magicked? When Steven is heading to the sorcerer's house and Morgan's there, and I'm trying to work out if she was trying to magic both the graffiti covered bus and the kid on the bike or what, but you know, she completely misses Steven in this very strange scene, which they try to add tension, but then the bus just kind of pulls in suddenly as if it almost forgot to stop at the stop. Again, it's just...
I actually liked the scene immediately after that where there was like all the extra exposition with Linma telling Strange, oh, your ignorance is a form of protection. Do you want to know the truth or remain in ignorance? And then he tells him all about how Strange's parents died when he was 18, that Strange is special, and that his parents died protecting him, different realms, Lake is trapped in them, blah, 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 blah. It just made me flash forward to the first J.K. Rowling movie. It was like a really, really wordy version of "You're a wizard, Harry."
Yeah. As I mentioned before, with the exposition of this movie, it is absolutely ridiculous because they've got so much padding where they could actually show this stuff, but no, they intend to just have a boring doctor conversation with annoying tannoy announcements going on in the background the entire time, then actually do something to show you what's meant to be going on.
And it's not like they were saving themselves for later scenes. Okay, we'll save our budget for these really awesome scenes, because again, the effects and whatever they use, you know, even though for the time weren't that dazzling, so you know, it wasn't exactly like they made up for it in those later scenes.
Yeah. Speaking of the special effects, I mean, when they're talking about the whole astral traveling and getting ready for it, everyone's just so very calm about it. You know, you've got the big sorcerer there explaining astral traveling so calmly, and Steven sitting there just accepting it, taking it as it is, and not in any way freaking out about it. And then we actually get to the astral traveling, and that was nice and psychedelic. That was just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if anyone dropped acid before watching this, at this point, they would probably freak out.
Well, you mentioned 2001 A Space Odyssey before, but that reminded me a bit of that, you know, the scene I mean.
Yep. Oh, boy.
But like, I must admit, Kubrick did a lot better, what was it, 10 years previous?
Yeah. Yeah, at least this movie would have probably been really well served with a big, black, mysterious monolith.
It could have served with a lot of things. But that's the thing, it needed to add more of that. Like I said earlier, that cheese, it took itself too seriously, whereas it could have had more of this kind of, this quirky, it just had a bit of fun with it. But yeah, I think they were really kind of taking it into TV world. We want this picked up. But yeah, honestly, if you want to have a pilot that's going to be picked up, don't have it full of boring medical scenes.
Yeah, like at least if they could have injected a bit of silly campy fun into it, that would have definitely been a saving grace for it. But you didn't even get to see that. It was just something that it certainly tried, but it took itself far too seriously for what it was, and it kind of fell flat in its face because of that.
I don't know. I think that when we find out why Morgan didn't kill Steven, that gives us a bit.
Because he's hot.
Because he's so hot.
Because he's hot.
She can't hurt him because she wants him.
She misses a man's touch or whatever it was. And was it during that part where he goes, I'll leave you old and barren until the end of time?
Oh. Like, savage blow. My God. Don't you try to oppress me, mate.
Why couldn't all the dialogue be that cheesy in camp the whole way through? But no.
Again, one of those moments where you see what this could have been.
Those bits where Morgan Le Fay was chatting to the nameless one, just that overblown, hyped up, florid language, that was a real pleasure, because that was as close to, I think for me, that was as close to campy as the movie was going to get.
And yeah, and that was a feel that would have been great the whole way through. Like, why reveal it this late in the piece?
Mm.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it starts with that and gives you a nice expectation, which it takes away from you for the vast majority of the movie before giving it back to you for a little bit, and then they go back to the next day. You see a shot of New York. It's still strange to see the Twin Towers in the movie. I've got to say that.
Oh, I thought that too. It almost gives me the goosebumps when I see it.
Yeah, and then it goes back to the hospital. Boring.
Actually, every time it went back to the hospital, I found myself vacillating between, okay, we've got the interesting scenescape here, back to the hospital. Oh, yeah, we got this scene here, back to the hospital. And I found myself quietly chanting that line from the Muppets as soon as it cut back to the hospital with the medical procedural things. I found myself saying, veterinarian hospital, the continuing story of a quack who has gone to the dogs.
Maybe this would benefit from a commentary over the top of this movie. I don't want to have to sit through it again to write the bloody thing.
Are you kidding? This would have been very well served but with a complete remake by the Muppets.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I would watch the hell out of that.
If only it had been that way, but unfortunately, no, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If it ever does, then I'll happily sit back here and do both Waldorf and Stadler's voices. Boo! Boo! No, it's terrible! Boo.
That would work well.
Do you know, I still think they could even bring Jessica Walter back to still play the part. She could be the only
they
human.
They probably could. They probably could.
And she could be the special guest star again.
Yeah. To introduce to you,
it's
anyway.
It's the Doctor Strange show! Introducing our very special guest star, Julie Walters! Yay!
Oh, it just stands there, surrounded by smoke, wearing that outfit. I miss a man's touch or whatever it was. I need a man to hug me.
I need a frog to hug me. No way!
All the while with that resting witch face.
We want to talk about everything but this movie, don't we? We've just got a bit more to cover over, and then we can put this one to bed. Okay, guys? Let's focus. Focus.
Focus. Focus.
Oh, God. When Morgan finally got into the house by the fact that Steven basically picked her up as a cat and put her inside the house, what's the point of having protection on the house if it's only on the outside of the house? why not have a few magic traps inside just in case? That would surely be useful, you know, before Wong gets apparently exploded or something. I don't know what happened to him. He was just pushed against a wall and then surrounded by fire. Magic!
I've lived in houses with security systems, and sometimes you can forget they're on when you get home. So, yeah, maybe having a whole bunch of magical security inside the house isn't all that good if your memory's a bit slippery sometimes.
Well, remember, this is the same guy that forgets that he can't walk 5 minutes earlier.
Look, it would keep Wong busy, okay? It would be something to keep Wong busy.
Got to give him something to do.
Wong, come and clip my toenails.
See, that would have made the movie even a little bit more exciting, but no.
Marvel presents the first ever movie geared to foot fetishists.
But I love how Stephen Strange just opens the door and sees this bedraggled cat. Oh, you must live here. You're wet. And lets it in. And I'm like, what? If you saw a homeless guy sitting out the front, oh, you must live here. Come on in. I'm leaving. Closes the door behind. Just seemed so easy.
He's got a heart of gold. Come on. He's meant to be a hero.
And later on, he had chains of gold.
He's probably also got a drifter bat hidden under the couch for subduing strange people.
Quite possibly.
What, you guys don't have a drifter bat?
No comment. But yeah, we finally, I guess, get to, I suppose, what is the action in the movie, and Morgan gets Stephen to the astral plane again, and I tell you what, Stephen does not need much convincing after Morgan starts trying to get sexy with him. And then she gives him more magic. She makes him more powerful, which doesn't seem to be the best choice for this conniving woman who wants to help her master take over the world. I mean, why give them... I don't know. I think I kind of just shut down trying to understand the plot at this point, because it really was the fact where my head was probably just going to go shut down entirely. And I had to make it to the end of this movie.
Oh, look, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I actually had to watch the movie in segments because after like a half an hour of watching it at first, I sat down and I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. Here we go. I'm going to take notes. I'm going to be really good for this. And I watched for half an hour of it and I could feel my brain starting to leak out my ears. And I'm just like, nah, okay, that's enough of one sitting. I'll go back to it later. And so I watched it over the next 2 days in half-hour fits and starts. And that was all I could cope with at one time.
Oh, I was much the same, and I think every time I kept expecting, okay, this part won't have any medical scenes in it. No, oh, it's the same as
nope,
the last one.
No, back to the hospital, no.
Yeah. At least at this point, there's like no more medical scenes after you get to this bit, but I did find quite amusing that Morgan's trying to seduce Stephen to the dark side. Oops, sorry, wrong movie. And and to show how good his power is, I don't think it's much of a... I think it's a bit of a libido killer to take him to see an old guy strung up in a tree covered with very bad white pancake face makeup.
Oh, no, not the best turn on.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah. Not really doing much for me there, guys.
Yeah. And then he wins by saying... I accept that I need to be this guy's... I need to call this guy Master, because earlier in the movie he said he will call no man Master. And by acknowledging the old guy as his magical master, suddenly they win, and Wong's alive, and the Master recovers very quickly, and he gets his fancy new magic duds, and Morgan gets made old, except when she's not, because she has a book later.
Oh, yeah, she God, turns up going. Again posing as some sort of self-help guru.
Hmm, which I'm guessing was a setup for the TV series.
Oh, that's what I thought, and I thought that, excuse me, I thought that would be very clever, actually, because she might actually come back in all these, not different personas, I suppose that's probably the word I'm looking for, like, it would be quite interesting to see what they would have done with the series if they gave her sort of, yeah, every episode she was sort of taking on a different sort of role or something like that. But unfortunately, actually, or maybe fortunately, I don't know. We never saw what happened.
Well, personally, I thought when Le Fay turned up again, like with the whole self-help guru being interviewed on TV scene, I thought, hang on a minute, ancient sorceress, indescribably evil, suddenly pops up in popular culture as a self-help guru. My God, finally an explanation for David Avocado Wolf.
Hmm. You may have something there.
You're full of theories.
I know, I know. I auto do my own conspiracy podcast.
There might be something in that. but we get like it's almost a scene for scene remake of Stephen Strange walking Clear Lake back to her apartment from earlier on, but they see this TV with Morgan Le Fay on there being interviewed in a rather stagey fashion. And I don't know, like it's like Clear Lake doesn't recognize her. So it's like she's been wiped from her memory. I don't know. Stephen just kind of looks at it pensively for a moment and then walks on and proceeds to make a date.
I think that's just a symptom of the post-traumatic stress disorder, really.
Okay, fair enough.
Doesn't he say in the previous scene, like, she's not having that many, like, he asked her and she said, oh, I'm not having those bad dreams and all that anymore. So I just assumed that, yeah, she'd sort of been...
Yeah, she's got, like, no memory of what happened other than as a bad dream when they leave the hospital.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, you got more of it than I did.
That's the thing, that's right. They don't want her to go to sleep. That's right.
As I said, I'd pretty much shut down by this stage and was just letting it wash over me. I listened to the point where just before the end, you know, he's been in training and they show his power at the last minute by having him help a stage magician have a slightly better trick.
Yeah, he turns the flowers. The magician was going to produce flowers, but he, using sleight of hand and Strange, turns it into a dove for him. And honestly, I think every street magician needs his own Stephen Strange. They'd make a lot more money.
Mm. Yeah, but it was a weird thing to add on, but it's kind of funny because the whole conversation we've been having has been when he magics this and he magics that, so it kind of doesn't make sense to have a magic scene at the end. I don't know. It was quite odd.
Well, I think that was more like an exposition. Like it's like almost like a to-be-continued sort of thing that's going to lead on to the... To the TV series that this was meant to be the pilot for. It's meant to show that Strange has been studying, working on improving his control for his powers and everything like that. And so in the TV series, we'll get to see Stephen Strange's powers grow, and we'll get to see him come into the role of the Sorcerer Supreme, Protector of the Earth, rah de rah de rah. And I think that's what that particular scene was meant to be. It's sort of like a nod and a wink and a to be continued.
And it would have been interesting to see had they continued, but, you know, I would have liked to have think they would have done it with, I don't know.
More magic, less
more
hospital.
More cheesiness, and I'd never normally say that in a movie.
A bit more camp.
Less hospital scenes, yeah.
Yep, and we get our freeze frame of his face looking rather smug as that 70s porn music plays again over the closing credits.
And I've screened enough movies in my time and seen enough movies in my time. The amount of 70s films that end with a freeze frame, like, yeah, yep. It seemed to be the thing.
It was the big thing for movies and TV back in the 70s. There always had to be a freeze frame. My favourite was always the ones in the Dukes of Hazzard when they're just about to jump the General Lee over something. And then whoever it was, Conway Twitty or someone who did the voiceovers. Well, now the Duke boys got themselves in a pickle now.
Oh, if only this was that fun.
Yeah, well, we I'm glad we didn't have a voiceover giving us any more exposition at the last minute, because I had more than enough exposition by the end of this movie.
Yeah, this was a very, very talky movie. And sometimes I just want it to be, come on, guys, bring it along, let's talk, more action.
And when we did finally get into scenes where they were, you know, the sci-fi scenes, you know, again, I'm talking about the quality of the films that we were watching it from, but, you know, remastered, I think we'd see that it was pretty much just made in a high school set with a lot of smoke. That's all it kind of gave me that feel. I think it was probably good we couldn't see it too clearly, and I can probably see why.
It was a very dark movie. It was, like, the lighting levels in that movie were just, like... unbelievably dark. You know, are we watching the Blair comic adaptation project or something?
And considering you're also putting something, this would have been, this is made for TV. It's interesting that they'd considered going the angle of being quite dark. But I think I read in the last month since the new Doctor Strange movies come out, they've finally released the 1978 version on DVD. So I wonder how more remastered it is now. And I don't know if it's something that we want to see.
Mate, look, if it's remastered to the point that they've remastered Manos, the Hands of Fate, I'll be in it.
We can only hope. I think we just need to dub over the top.
Well, before we go any further, I mean, we're definitely obviously ready to go here. So it is that time to I suppose, work out what is redeemable in this movie and if it can be considered redeemable overall. I think I know the answers, but we're still going to go through the exercise. So, Chris, as our guest... can you please go first? Let us know what you found redeemable in this movie or things that are completely irredeemable and what your overall opinion of this is redeemable wise.
Okay, well, for me, the redeemable features were just how completely and utterly ridiculous it was. It really was a ridiculous movie that took itself far too seriously for what it was. Like I said, it should have... If it had just been a movie of Jessica Walter's boobs versus Peter Hooten's moustache, I would have been happy. You know, because like, but Peter Hooten, I can't recall for the life of me what else I'd seen him in, but he had it going on. He was like your typical 70s doctor, that hair, that moustache. He, at the risk of sounding crude, he looked like Ron Jeremy hates Ron Burgundy, and they had a beautiful bouncing hate baby together. you can bleep that out.
Okay.
But yeah, for me, the big star of this was the really, really tacky, bad magical effects, Jessica Walter's boobs, and Peter Hooten's moustache. I can't really think of anything else that I would want to remember from this movie. It was just so desperately, desperately dull. It had little moments, little flashes of brilliance of what it had the potential to be, but it was just let down by too much exposition, too much reliance on Deus Ex Machina. Yeah, if I could just have like a supercut of Jessica Walter's boobs and Peter Hooten's mustache, I'd be happy. But other than that, no. Nope.
So not redeemable.
I'd even watch that.
Fair enough. Oh, that's one thumbs down then. Let's see how we go. Well, Christian, I picked this one, so I shall let you go next.
Okay. Gosh, I know a lot of the things that Chris was saying, I kind of was nodding, felt like saying ditto to a lot of that. But look, I must admit, going in, and even as I'm talking right now, I hadn't made the decision on whether it was redeemable or irredeemable. And don't laugh at me, because I know, you know, my thoughts have been quite negative towards the movie, but I just, yeah, it felt like it wanted to be so much more, and I couldn't get past, as we said, the word plotting comes up so much. It was, for an hour and a half movie, I've never looked at my watch so much or had to watch it in so many parts, and that's not a good sign for a film, especially when you're seeing what they can do now with superhero movies in making them exciting, and they could still make them exciting at that point. And I think, unfortunately, I was going in... I hate saying it. I think I was going in expecting a 70s sci-fi movie with a disco soundtrack and was quite disappointed. I was expecting what we saw in that poster to be sort of the entire film, and I would have quite happily seen him flying through the air with really dodgy special effects and all that sort of stuff. I think it would have made for a much more enjoyable camp movie in the feel of the 60s Batman, you know, the sort of movies I mean. And unfortunately, it suffered from that. So it felt far too piloty, too much like a pilot to me. I felt like I would rather us be watching the second film that doesn't even exist because I feel like we've got past then all the, you know, the boring medical stuff. But yeah, I think I'd have to say Jessica Walter's probably the best thing about this film, and it's dull the last 15 minutes. They finally decide to add some action, but yeah, I think as I've been speaking, I'm going to say it's irredeemable.
Ooh, well, guess it comes down to me. Uh-oh. Then. Whatever will I do?
Yeah, here's trouble.
Yeah. Well, look, straight up, I mean, I think I set myself up with too much expectations. I actually watched the trailer for this on YouTube. I highly recommend checking out the trailer, though. The trailer is amazing. And I came into it with that in mind. And look, I mean, just for the sheer overblowingness of the music, the combination of synth and heavy guitar, I really loved when the music let go. And with the special effects that were often accompanied that the more out there music, I really enjoyed that. And the few times the actors actually, I suppose, gave in to the silliness of the concept and there was some hemming up, that was very, very entertaining. The demons, the rubber suit demons and the astral stuff they did, I found myself going, okay, this is what I wanted to see. Why can't the rest of this movie be like this? As I mentioned before, the music really did complement Stephen Strange's porn mo. It was straight out of Porn Town. but there was just so much filler and the fact that so much of it was set in this hospital where nothing was happening, just great extended scenes of absolute nothing, which was just so very, very dull and made it come to a standstill for a large chunk of the movie. When we finally did get to the action, they kind of started raising the interest level again, but then they just won for out of nowhere. It just suddenly happened. And I really wanted to like this movie. There's bits in it that I thought, if it had have all been like this, it would have been amazing. But it just dragged on too much. So I've got to say, I would love to finish the year on a nice positive, but not this time. This is not redeemable.
Oh, three thumbs down.
Yeah. Sorry, Stephen Strange.
Yeah. To whom do I apply to get that 1 hour and 38 minutes of my life back?
Well, if you submit a form in triplicate, we'll pass it through to our QA area and they'll get back to you within 3 to 4 years.
I'm more interested in seeing the cut of the movie that Chris keeps talking about, but anyway.
The boobs and mustache supercut. Yeah, baby.
Can we please splice a 1978 disco soundtrack over the top? That'd be fantastic.
You've just described the perfect 70s Doctor Strange movie. Okay.
Why couldn't we have been the ones that made that movie? Anyway.
Oh, well.
Oh, totally.
Okay, well, that's a resounding irredeemable, even more so than usual, because we've got three of them. Oh. But, hey, guess what? This movie has fans.
I suppose they exist.
I am literally speechless.
I was even surprised that it was over five stars on IMDb. I was flabbergasted.
Well, look, I've been back to Amazon, and I've found another review. And I've got to pronounce this properly because the title is in all caps. Possibly the best comic book movie of all time! If you are a Doctor Strange fan, you will immediately notice the changes from the comics. The Ancient One becomes Merlin from King Arthur. Doctor Strange changes from a surgeon to a psychiatrist. But this well-made TV pilot is well worth seeing. If I remember correctly, it got better ratings than The Incredible Hulk, Spider-Man, and the other Marvel Comics pilots. CBS got complaints about witchcraft, and in the 70s shied away from it. Peter Hooton does Doc well with his portrayal, and Jessica Walter went on to star on Days of Our Lives and is easy on the eyes. 5 stars.
Internet trolls.
Are you sure the opening line wasn't possibly the best movie ever made and I'm on lots of drugs?
Actually, I think that review was written by like the son of the key grip who's feeling vengeful that his dad's effort went unrecognized for that movie.
He's probably the only person that shows up in the special features documentary to talk about the film because no one else wants to admit to it.
Hey guys, we didn't know there was one fan we mentioned earlier. Maybe it was Stan Lee.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, ah. Actually.
Nah, it wouldn't have been Stan Lee. He would have ended it with Excelsior.
But he's incognito here. Maybe. I don't know.
Well, it's really funny. Since you mentioned the trailer, Trevor, I just quickly Googled it, and I've noticed in the last... Well, this year, they've come out with the teaser trailers, the high-definition 1978 teaser trailer, and I thought that was strange, and I'm wondering if it actually links to the new movie instead, or unless it was just promo for the new DVD. I just thought that was strange.
I think the fact that this, as of 3 weeks ago, you could watch this in its entirety on YouTube, but now it's been taken down, is that someone's decided that they've got enough of a claim on it that they can still make some profit on it off the back of the new Marvel movie. That's my theory.
Yeah. Clever, I suppose, on their end.
It's been nearly 30 years. It's time to get paid.
Indeed. Indeed. This is the time to release Doctor Strange stuff. Okay, well, there we go. We have finished not on a high, but I think we've definitely had fun. So, of course,
I wish I was high after watching that movie. Seriously.
I had a more enjoyable chat doing this than watching the film. And I think, yeah, I think I'd happily do this again than having to ever, I think, watch that again. But I am intrigued to see the new movie, and I'm hoping it's nothing like this one.
It is much, much better.
I have seen I've seen a few of the Red Band trailers for the new Doctor Strange movie, and I will gladly admit it does look pretty damn spectacular.
So I wouldn't be surprised if they want to forget this effort from 1978 and move on.
Yeah.
It's like Windows. It's like Microsoft giving you Windows 7 to apologize for Windows Vista. Guys, we're really sorry about the 1978 thing here. Have this instead.
Very much so.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Well, I mean, I guess there's not too much more to say. We certainly don't have another movie to announce, being that this is the season 3 finale of the Rufus Project. Aww.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe the amount of movies we've got through and managed to not redeem. It's been very up and down this year,
It's been a bumper year of crap movies, very much so. And if you do want to see what those movies were, you can head to rufusproject.com. I'll get the plug in now. And there is actually a link to a list of all the movies that we have viewed and in some cases managed to redeem. I think our average on that is a bit low, though. But it's still fun.
Oh, but the scary thing is looking at that list, Trevor, and add, if you were to add together the amount of hours we've watched bad films, I think we'd need to seek medical help. I don't know.
I try not to think about it. And hopefully we haven't damaged you too much, Chris. Thank you very much for joining us on this adventure.
You're very welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Fantastic.
Well, apart from watching the movie, that sucked.
Oh, of course. And I honestly think having three of us giving it a resounding, you know, thumbs down, I think, Trevor, a podcast that's dedicated to, I suppose, essentially bad movies, I can't think of a more perfect end than having a three resounding irredeemable.
I have had more fun in the last hour and a bit shredding the movie than I did watching it.
Exactly.
Often how it goes.
Oh, so now we'll have to have you back again sometime, Chris.
It would be wonderful. Thank you very much.
Now, Chris, if anybody wants to check out any of your stuff, where should they go?
Yes, if you like trip-hop, down-tempo and Balearic sounds, go along to Mixcloud. I do a once-in-a-blue-moon podcast called Moonkissed. It's great chill-out music for Sunday afternoons or quiet evenings at home. I'm planning on doing another podcast which is more focused on like heavy dance and psychedelic house, psychedelic trance sort of stuff. But that's in the pipeline. But yeah, if you go along to Mixcloud and search on the term Moonkissed, you'll find all the current episodes that I've got up there, and it'll be great to keep you relaxed. Good stuff after a long weekend.
Fantastic. We will, of course, include a link through to those in our description. So get down there and click on it to check that
out.
Thank
you very much.
And, I mean, like I said, we're wrapping up season 3 of the Rufus Project, but there is still one more to come. We will be having our irredeemable Christmas special over the next few weeks. So keep an eye on rufusproject.com or follow the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook. For more information about that, we're going to have some information coming soon. We've gotten through the Star Wars holiday special. We've gotten through Grumpy Cat's worst Christmas ever.
Oh no!
Oh my god!
And so, what are we going to give ourselves the Christmas present of not bothering to redeem this year? Stay tuned to find out.
Oh, I know there's been a few ideas thrown around, but I think after just hearing the reaction from Chris, I think this needs to top the previous two.
Oh, that's a big goal.
I know.
And probably one last plug, if you're interested in finding out about events that Christian is putting on, of course you can head to christianfletcher.com or follow Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook. You're going to be missing out on his fortnightly announcements of what's coming up for the next couple of months, so keep an eye on those pages to stay up to date there.
Yes, and I'm looking forward. I'm sure I'll have more things I can't think at the moment, but we're going into holiday time at the moment, so you'll hear more in the new year, so yeah, keep a
listen. You may even see me at a couple of those events DJing.
Oh, yes, definitely. God, I better gets the diary out and starts working out. I better start working out my events for the new year. But that's another day.
Absolutely. Well, again, I mean, look, the movie was straight out terrible, but this has been an absolutely awesome chat. So, Christian, thank you so much for...
Thank you very much, Trevor. Yeah. Thanks, Christian.
Thank you. Thanks, guys. It's been great having you on board, Chris. And we'll, as I said, have to do it again sometime. And Trev, I can't wait. I don't know if it's the right thing to say. I can't wait to watch the Irredeemable Christmas movie, but I look forward to seeing what we come up with.
Absolutely. And oh, one last thing, of course, is we are completely wide open when it comes to movies to try to redeem next year. So if you've got any suggestions, get them into us on the previously mentioned places, or send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. Particularly if you would actually like to join us for our start of our first one of season four, because obviously if you want to champion a movie, we would love to get you on the podcast as well. But definitely check that list out so you don't send through one that we've already done. Deal?
Oh, and the good thing is we seem to be uncovering lately anyway, because we've done so many of the mainstream or the iconic ones, we're starting to find some, you know, digging a bit deeper. So, yeah, it's always good to hear from people because we stumble on movies like Doctor Strange. So it's always good to get suggestions. Anyway, yeah, we welcome them.
Okay, I think this is also probably the longest outro we've done for quite some time. So
yeah, sorry.
I think we better wrap this up. So, again, thank you, guys. Thank you, everyone out there, for listening. And, we'll see you for our Irredeemable Christmas special and then season four next year. Rufus Project, signing off.
Boy? Oh, boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? It's got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy, oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm BB, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy, oh boy.
Redeeming features.